civil priority. Isolation now in effect. To avoid the risk of contamination, please stay indoors and await further instructions.
Well, good morning, Tribe World. It's Ray here. I hope you're all keeping well. And in different parts of the world, there's different levels. And some countries, I think, are easing restrictions. Others are still locked down. But wherever you are, I hope you're all keeping well and positive and staying safe. And I'm joined now by a very special young lady who is a tremendous person and I know very well loved for all of you within our tribal fandom, who has been with us since the very beginning when the tribe started, and in fact has a very distinction of being the very first actor seen in the tribe. And so join me in welcoming the very lovely Jamie. Good morning, Jamie.
Good morning.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm great, thank you. How are you?
I'm not too bad, Jamie. We were chatting before we started recording. You're up in just outside of Auckland in New Zealand, and had a bit of an earthquake this morning, I hear.
Yes, New Zealand did have an earthquake a little bit further away from where I'm staying, so I didn't feel anything, but hopefully everyone further down is okay.
Yeah, but it's a bit scary. I remember, you know, when I first came to New Zealand, Jamie, for our very first series, I didn't know there were earthquakes in New Zealand. And I was on the 10th floor of a hotel, and, you know, we were doing a recce, and a recce for our listeners is when we check out different production locations. And I woke up, and there had been an earthquake. I didn't know what it was. And I woke up thinking, that's odd. And I opened the door. I run to the door of the bedroom, and one of my colleagues who was with me, from England, and I said, do you feel your legs shaking? And he said, no, I bet the building is. And I was like, oh my God, what's going on? So it's pretty scary, but so New Zealand's in the ring of fire, isn't it? You get used to it in some ways, but I mean, I it freaks me out. I hate it when the earthquakes happen. Does it bother you, Jamie, or are you used to it?
I haven't felt very many in my life. I know one time filming The Tribe, actually, I was doing some of the voiceover works in the booth and there was a little earthquake, but it was so padded, the building was so padded and that room was so padded, it was just very slight. So
yes,
all right. I have too much experience with them.
So Jamie, how have you been coping with the COVID-19? And because now New Zealand's restrictions have lifted quite considerably and life's kind of getting back to normal. And now during the lockdown, did you cope all right?
We coped all right. In my bubble, I had me, my mum, my dad, my three sons, and my current boyfriend. And so it was nice not to be alone. But because the lockdown came on so quickly, it was quite challenging. Like on the Monday, you had school, and then that next Tuesday, the next day, like everything changed. There was no more school. You couldn't just pop to the supermarket, cafes were shutting, everything was just changing so quickly. So I did struggle with the initial change and having to process that all and adjust. But health-wise, we all stayed well, so that was the main thing, which was good.
Oh, that's good. And what did you do all day, Jamie?
Okay, so in those first couple of weeks, what ended up being quite exciting was ordering groceries online and waiting for your delivery. And so spent a lot of time thinking about, oh, what are we going to buy? And then as the weeks progressed, schools got more organized and you started having activities to try and do some distance learning with the children. And the days seemed quite long, but you were able to just enjoy each other's company a lot more because there weren't those outside pressures or demands. So that's what with our days.
And Jamie, a lot of your fans will be absolutely fascinated to know that, yeah, you're a mother and you've got, as you say, three lovely sons, and all of them are on the autistic spectrum, aren't they?
Yes, that's correct. So all three have been diagnosed with autism, and that whole saying, that's, you know, quite well known out there, that if you know one person with autism, you know one person with autism. It's such a spectrum, and everyone's affected differently and presents differently. And that's definitely the case with my three boys. They're all just so different from each other. So it's a very interesting, challenging and different but rewarding kind of life that I live as a solo mother with them.
I bet, but well done to you. I mean, it's not easy. Being a solo mum with a neurotypical child is hard enough, but to be a solo mum with a child with special needs is very challenging.
And, yes.
So, Jamie, that's very challenging for you. And Phoenix, I know that's your eldest son, is a little bit more. He's more nonverbal, and he's a bit more far on the autistic spectrum, is he, Jamie?
Yes, he definitely is, and also because he's older, it's a lot more obvious the differences between him and a neurotypical 16-year-old. And with his younger brothers, who are 7 and 8, it's still like early days to say, oh, okay, how much are they going to be impacted by autism? So no, Phoenix at this stage is definitely the most affected.
Oh, and how was that, Jamie, for you? I mean, when you did you get a support structure? Obviously, your mum and dad were there, but you'll obviously know that Linda and I, my wife and I, with our charity, we've got a foundation that tries to support and raise awareness of particularly autism and Asperger's syndrome. But it's not easy, is it, with the schools and with the governments, and a lot of people don't understand what it is. And how did you, I mean, as did Phoenix, he's been able to go to school, obviously, and that's important. And the other two boys, they're okay in school, they're quite happy and secure.
Yeah, so all three of my boys were eligible and all attend a special needs school, and that works for us and that works for them. They just wouldn't be able to cope or learn in mainstream because of their needs and their sensory issues and stuff like that. So having a special needs school and being able to access that has been really helpful for our quality of life.
Oh, that's terrific. Because as you rightly say, it's a shame for some, and there's many young children who are forced just by circumstances to go into mainstream education. And that it's very, very hard. It's very difficult to navigate that world. And
It was challenging. I worked last year as a teacher aide in a mainstream school, and just seeing, like, so having my personal experience as being a mum with special needs children, but then having some professional experience and seeing mainstream children, and then just some children who are just falling through the cracks because they don't have high enough needs to go to a special needs school, so they're in mainstream, and just sometimes not everyone gets it. Like, children don't always get it, other parents don't always get it. So yeah, it's a really, there's still a lot of like education needed for our society, I think.
I agree entirely. And Matt Robinson, who played Slade in season 5 of The Tribe, is a tremendous guy. His young son has had to, is severely autistic actually, and had to go into like a home, you know, for the, and then come home on the weekends, it's just so hard, it's so difficult, and so well done to you, Jamie. I think, you know, very often people will say, and again, this is not me being sexist or chauvinistic, but you know, when I respect mothers, my mother was a tremendous lady. And I was a handful because I've got special needs, and I always thought I was eccentric, Jamie. I didn't realize I was on the autistic spectrum until I was 50 years old. That's so crazy. It's, and I just knew I walked to a bit of a different drumbeat. Jamie, it's an interesting thing, you know, there's a, and to anybody, and I think it's applicable to any human being, that there's room in our world for everybody. Everybody's important. The tolerance society, you know, if you live your life trying to be what others expect you to be, you'll never be free. And it's very important that you know, I quickly realized that, you know, I would have to do things my way, you know, because I couldn't do things the mainstream way. And I would struggle with different things, but it's like a fish. A fish can't climb a tree, you know.
Yes.
But a fish can swim. And it's the same thing. A dolphin can't be a taxi driver.
Yeah.
So, and does Phoenix and the boys have any special interests at all, Jamie?
I don't, like, there are quite a few people out there on the spectrum who have, like, a really good talent or are really good at something. I don't see any of the children having that kind of skill, but what I admire about all of them is that they can just really enjoy the moment. And I think that's something, like, when you start to think about things differently, and, well, for me, it's been a long journey of having to not compare them and not compare them to neurotypical children and not compare them to a life I know. So when I sit back and I look at, like, okay, what can I learn from you? Just seeing how naturally present they are when they're doing something, it's inspiring.
Yeah, no, very much so. And it's interesting. I mean, I quickly realized, you know, that, you know, for some people, an amazing achievement is climbing Mount Everest. For other people, an amazing achievement is getting through the day.
Definitely. You really start to change what you value. And being a mum of special needs children, I've found that I celebrate a lot more of the small things. And while they're small, maybe in society's eyes, they're big for us. So the fact that, you know, you can now put your pants on yourself, like, that's huge, and it's a real celebration. And so, yeah, you just start to value a lot of different things.
Yeah, and particularly for special needs children that are non-verbal. I mean, if they go into the shop and they can order something or pay for something, it's an amazing achievement. It's climbing Mount Everest. It's heroic. And I love that, you know. I think it's and the world needs people, I think people on the spectrum tend to be quite obsessional about things, music or rhythms or sensory. I mean, I love some of the viewers, some of the listeners will know, Jamie, I love rhythms.
Sure. And
I watch people walk and how the wind goes and it moves the trees and yeah, how people speak. And I mean, you today, your voice is very lovely, how it's very melodic and it's terrific. And, you know, that I bet your boys are really involved with the natural world, that yeah, they're really in tune with nature and it's terrific. And, you know, and Jamie, you went to study psychology, didn't you?
Yes, that's right. So I completed that back in 2012. At that stage, when I had started my degree, I just had Phoenix, but I did my degree distance learning. So that was an interesting experience, and I was happy by the end of it to have achieved completing a degree.
Which is an amazing achievement. And what motivated that, Jamie? Where had you been interested in it?
Yes, I'd been interested in psychology for a long time and people's behaviour. And then at that stage, Phoenix had already been diagnosed with autism. And so psychology, there's a whole field like with abnormal psychology. So I was very interested in health psychology. So I was very interested in doing papers on those so I could have a better understanding of how to manage him and just have more awareness, because it wasn't something that I'd heard of until he was died. Well, I didn't have much knowledge. I'd heard of it, but I didn't have much knowledge on autism and what that involved and how to better interact with him to help him to reach his full potential and things like that. So that's why I went down the path of psychology.
I remember around that time, Jamie, we'd been in contact and you had asked me about, you know, you were aware of my family and that we're touched by it as well. I don't even remember we caught up and I was trying to explain a bit that it's a good thing to have, really. I believe that. I mean, I think we're blessed, you know, to have that other way of looking at the world, you know, and those people in our lives. But it's certainly challenging, isn't it? I mean,
yeah, it is definitely challenging. And it took me, unfortunately, it took me a long time to really come to terms with, you know, it's okay. Like, it's just different. It's just a different way of life. It's a different way of doing things. But you can, there is rewarding moments to these challenges. And so it's just about changing your perspective.
Yes, yes. And it's interesting, Jamie. I mean, I was speaking with A.J. Penn, who has written our tribe novels, the tie-in through the three books. And in the latest book, I mean, we were talking about the definition of love. And it's interesting. Love, I think, is where somebody's happiness is your happiness is secondary to the people you love's happiness. You know, in other words, you can't be happy unless Phoenix and the boys are happy.
And, yeah, I agree with that.
It's quite amazing, is it, where you become second, and it's like, you know, they reach into your spirit, your soul, your heart, and control you, and it's the pain of love, you know, and it's quite extraordinary, well done. I mean, that's quite fascinating. And so will you do anything with your degrees? Will you try and become a psychologist or not, or?
I don't think I'd ever become a psychologist because I just, the demands on a psychologist, like, I love being a mother, and being a mother to these boys is quite demanding time-wise, emotionally, mentally, all of those things, but I love it. So I want to look for something where I'm not needing to give too much of myself but can still do a good job. And I just don't think, I think psychology requires too much of me that I wouldn't be able to have that balance I like, where I could prioritize being a mum.
Now, Jamie, you may remember a young man, James Champion. Do you remember James?
Oh, yes.
He was a third assistant, a second assistant, was one of our, for the listeners, he was a tremendous young man who wanted to be a director at one point, and I met him and his parents in New Zealand, in Australia, and he wanted to come into the industry. So I became a bit of a mentor to him, and he came out to New Zealand on our crew, and he was an intern. And Jamie would have known him. He would have been getting you ready for the different scenes, Jamie, and coordinating the different things. Well, Jamie now is a doctor, and he's a psychologist, and he is an expert in autism. And what's quite interesting, Jamie, because his passion was a director. He wanted to be a director. This is what his dream was. You know, he was a fish swimming in the sea, and he was very happy doing that until he came to our charity, our foundation, and he realized other people, their struggles, and he then, for some reason, had almost a calling. It was like a religious enlightenment where he dramatically changed course. And he subsequently went to get his degrees and his PhD and become a doctor. And we still, you know, I see him, I'm in contact with him quite regularly. And he's become, a tremendous kind of person who's really helping a lot of people. And he's realized that he now... being a director was the fish trying to climb the tree, and he's actually swimming in the ocean doing what he loves doing. So, and that for you, Jamie, is quite amazing. With you're the fish in the sea with you being a mum, and I applaud and respect and admire that so much. I mean, I think mothers are the anchors to any family, and
very important.
Oh, very important. It really is. And Jamie, your kind of origins are Maori, and from Nui, is it originally, like some of your ancestors, or I seem to remember in the Pacific Isles.
Yes, Nui.
Wow, your mum. Oh, that's interesting. I kind of remember it, and I'll tell you why. Because I love art, and there's one of the greatest painters, artists of. Our generation now is John Poole. You possibly have heard of him, but he was from Nui, and my wife and I supported him in his early days, and we have some of his lovely etchings and canvas drawings around our properties, and so I kind of remember that when I was talking to your mum, way back, when you joined in the tribe. And we'll get to some of the listeners' questions in a minute, Jamie. But, so you're in a good space in your life right now, which is nice to hear. And with the boys, and you're getting through this kind of COVID situation. The kids are back at school, and do they have any? I mean, what will Phoenix do? You think will he go? Does he show any interest in any particular career or trade or?
No, I think for Phoenix, it's going to be more of a vocational program. I don't imagine that he, because he's 16, but he's kind of got the mentality of a five-year-old. I don't know when he would ever get to a stage that he could contribute and hold down a job and follow long instructions. So for him, it's just going to be more keeping him occupied in the day. Vocational programs.
That's great. But I mean, how amazing for you to do that degree, and you would do it what in the evenings or on the correspondence and this type of thing, eh?
I would do it in the evenings. I think what helped me is obviously filming The Tribe, we did correspondence school, and so I had a good foundation of being able to be disciplined and stick to a schedule and jump in like life like Phoenix and then study in the evenings when he was asleep, or grab those moments in between where he's entertaining himself. Oh, look, I could get something done.
Yeah. And Jamie, looking back on those, again, a lot of the fans will be, they see The Tribe, and we were again speaking before we recorded that both you and I were humbled, aren't we, by the support and passion and interest of the fans all these years. We're reflecting on that 20 years has passed by, and both of us, hey Jamie, we're kind of all in awe, really, that the fans are still there, interested in the series. It's quite extraordinary, isn't it?
Amazing. I would never have thought way back then that it would still be relevant today and affecting people's lives and helping them in a positive way. It's quite a privilege to have been a part of, and just, hearing from fans or having the interest there. It's amazing.
Yeah, no, it is. It's very special, and it's very, as you say, it is a privilege, and it's and that's hence some of these lockdown interviews that I thought, hey, we've all got a bit of time in the world.
Yeah.
And that if we could, I was always aware from the, and still indeed to this day, from the messages and letters we get and new generations, Jamie, we were reflecting on that as well. Some people that weren't even born when The Tribe started and have found the series. And it really, as well as entertaining them, I mean, some of the themes we explored gave guidance and inspiration and touched them, and whether it's teenage pregnancy, bulimia, whatever. And so it's quite extraordinary. But it's very humbling. But also the fans are quite interested. How was it like for you as you would have been, how old would you have been, Jamie, when you were being?
I was 11 when I came down.
11, wow. And yeah. And Jamie, had you always been interested in the arts or acting, or how did that come about?
Well, for me, acting, I was at primary school, and my primary teacher, her husband was a director, and he was doing a short film, and that's how I got into it. I auditioned, got the part, and then after that got an agent, and then you start having auditions, and I enjoyed the experience, so it's something I just kept doing. But it just kind of happened.
And for the kind of listeners, that what would happen for Jamie, that we, I mean, I've often said, Jamie, it's like going into the army, it's sort of like going to boarding school, that you we had a tribe school, and with tutors, and you would do your, I mean, each, because it was varying ages, how did you find it, that you'd have different tutors and the correspondence courses? It was quite weird, really. I mean, it must have been an odd few years for a young lass, to be living away from home. We had cast houses and house parents and all kinds of things. And maybe you could describe what your life was like, Jamie, and what your routines. You'd be up early and learning lines and all kinds of stuff, eh? So what time would you arrive on set normally?
Okay, so most days you'd it would vary. Like if it was a location day, you could be picked up at 5:30 in the morning. But on an average day, you get picked up around 7 o'clock to beat that rush hour traffic and get makeup done and all dressed in wardrobe, get your scenes done. And then I often would only, I'd have a lot of my scenes in the morning, and then by the afternoon after lunch, I'd go up to the classroom in the building. And do my studies then, and then just wait around until the, would often have like bigger cast shots where more of the cast were there. So we just kind of waiting, then back on set, doing some more filming, then home time. And then after dinner, you'd need to learn your lines for the next day, know what scenes were going on. It was very busy, but it was really exciting and interesting, and in hindsight, it's a privilege to have been part of that kind of experience.
Well, we were privileged to have you, Jamie, and it's like a family within a family, a tribe within a tribe, that we all became very close and working. And you, a lot of the people, you know, you got on well with all the cast members and the crew. And And do you keep in touch with many of them, Jamie, or not really?
So I have a lot of them as Facebook friends. They do regularly, and I'm still quite close with Dan, who played Ved.
Yes. And I'm hopeful that we'll do an interview with Dan, and that's lovely, actually. That's special. And so, Jamie, yeah, that's interesting. It is. It's very pressurized as a young person, but overall a good experiencing the schooling and doing a show like The Tribe. As you say, it was a privilege. You cite it very, very humbly as a privilege, but it was a privilege to have you a member of our cast, and that meant a lot to me. And you know, I hold you, as I've always done, in the highest regard as a human being, and your mum and dad and your family are tremendous people. And I'd like to address something, if I may, because within our tribal fandom, there's a lot of speculation and wondering and what actually happened. Why did Jamie or the character Chloe disappear? And Jamie, if you feel comfortable, maybe we could just address that. Do you mind if we can?
No, that's absolutely fine.
Yeah, and basically what I'd like to reveal on that you have a professional life and a personal life, and sometimes a rugby player, say, might break their leg in their personal life, and therefore they're unable to play rugby in their professional life. And I was quite aware in the tribal family, the tribal school, the tribal production, that we have young people who will act out very serious storylines, very controversial storylines. And we were always monitoring if they were happy and secure, because we're custodians, Jamie, as you know, of the welfare. We'd look after you guys very well with chaperones and house parents and diets, and make sure that you were eating your greens and getting enough sleep and all this kind of stuff. And basically, you know, but at the same token, you're a young person, like going to school, and you'll fall in love or not fall in love. And that's really, you know, what happens. But we mustn't misconstrue that because that happened, that you're suddenly a bad person or that you are fired, because that's not the case at all. That we had a production to make. And if you were unhappy, Jamie, in the production, we would have altered the storylines to accommodate that, and the doors were always open, and I'd hoped that Chloe would come back, you know, and that's as simple as that. And is there anything you want to add to that, Jamie? I mean, anything you'd like to say on that?
I think the only thing I'd like to say is, obviously, at that point in time, I was 14, you're developing, there's a lot going on emotionally, and you can just lose sight of your professional life by getting so caught up in the personal. And it's all learning, and yeah, it is what it is.
And that's really, and so, you know, Jamie, it happens in I mean, in Hollywood, it happens all the time in adult movies and things like this. And it's not a crime, you know. I mean, it's as you say, I tell you that you compared to me at 14 were, and Dan are angels, you know. I mean, I was a very rough kid. I really was. And Romeo and Juliet, how can you stand in the way of young love? And there's nothing wrong with that. It's beautiful. It's learning. And why should you at 14 know about your professional life? We're aware of that, and we were aware of that, and we made provision to have you for your own welfare, Jamie. That's what happened. But that doesn't mean to say that Chloe couldn't have come back. And as I was saying to you, Jamie, you know this, I would work with you tomorrow in a heartbeat, you know, because you're a lovely person, and I hold you in very high regard. And likewise, I share the same sentiments for Dan. He's a tremendous young man, was a lovely actor, but you know, at the end of the day, you know, we've got a multi-million-dollar production with lots of responsibilities and lots of people involved, and it's just like if people go to a rugby match and there's no rugby players on the field, there's no rugby game. And you know, we had to be aware that our cast would be present each and every day, and without going into the detail, that for very valid reasons, first love, confusion, coming of age, all of that stuff, that, you know, I thought it was in your interest and Dan's that we took those professional pressures off you and allowed you the time and freedom to work through some issues. And that happens. And we had to reschedule and rework the storylines and to do an audit on which cast we would have available to complete the series. Anyway, that's it in overview terms. And so with that, we'll move on to other things, Jamie. I've got some questions I'm going to get to now from the fans. And so if you bear with me and let me just open up some here. And yeah, there's quite fascinating ones about the animals that, because you were always like with Bluebell, the cow, and all this kind of stuff. And there's quite an interesting one here, which says, this is from Alina Webb. Good morning, Ali. Why did none of the tribe notice Bluebell was a boy? And did you notice that? I never noticed that was Bluebell. Did you notice Bluebell was a boy, Jamie?
Yeah. No, I had no idea.
That's wonderful. I wonder how did you know, Ali? If you could do me a favor and email contact@entercloud9.com. I'm fascinated. How did you know that? I mean, I never noticed that. I never even thought about it.
Oh, I never really thought. That's amazing on their part, being able to notice that.
That's extraordinary. I think it's lovely that bear with me. I'm just, there's lots of lots of people who are like Kriya Pepos is saying, by far my favorite character. So we got from Jamie Lee Jackson, what outcome would you have loved for Chloe? That's an interesting, I mean, again, on that, Jamie, that, I mean, the books are the books, and we can't have any spoilers because we do like season 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, the story will continue. So there is if anybody wants to know what the official kind of thing is, it will be in the books or is in the books. But from your own perspective, what would you have liked to have seen for Chloe, Jamie?
What I would have liked is, I remember at the end of series four, Chloe was quite into bed and he wasn't always treating her the greatest. I would have liked her to have explored that a bit further and then realised, you know what, I deserve better than this. The Morax have always had my back, and then gone back there and just, yeah, see how life panned out there and you know, help with the younger ones the way the older ones would have helped Chloe when she was younger. So just taking on like a more motherly, elderly, responsible type role, I would have liked that for her.
And that's a nice segue into a question from Svenja Batlen. I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly, Swenja, how would you think Chloe would have managed if she would have been stayed with the tribe and been older one, looking out for the younger ones, Sammy, Lottie, Mouse, and so you, that's what you're really saying, Jamie. That, you know, because you know, there's that thing as I am now, so sorry as you are now, so once was I, as I am now, so you will be. I mean, you were the young one, and you become the older one, looking out for the younger ones. It's very beautiful. It mirrors families, and so you would have liked that kind of thing to pass that baton on and look out for those that loved and cared for you, the older ones. That's nice. So bear with me. That Michelle, morning. Good morning, Michelle. This is a question, Jamie. There were times when Ved clearly cared for Chloe, but then there were other times when he looked like he was just using her. What did you think of Ved's feelings for Chloe? Were they genuine?
I think Ved's feelings for Chloe were very genuine. I think he was torn between his loyalty to the Technos and, you know, he had a brother in there and that's all he had known. I think that he could have, you know, made a switch and come to the Morats too because he loved her so much.
And I mean, again, some of the listeners will be interested from a writing perspective, Jamie, that Chloe and Ved's storyline mirrors Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah.
It's like two different tribes, you know. If you're familiar with the play, you'll know what I mean. That, I mean, it's two star-crossed lovers, you know. I mean, and that was kind of the inspiration. But so bear with me. I've got one from Magic and Anderson, M-A-J-K-E-N, Magic and Anderson, Erickson. Something tells me you're Scandinavian, Magic. So forgive me for not pronouncing your name correctly. One of my favorite characters of all time. I loved her season 4 storyline when she was growing up and having a little more serious problems, especially with the Ved relationship. There was something so intriguing with their relationship with Chloe, really longing for love and a partnership, and Ved being so unwilling to admit even to himself that he likes her. What do you think would have happened with their relationship if Ram had not got involved and they would have stayed in the city? Would they have stayed together? And if so, do you think any of them would have switched sides? That's that Romeo and Juliet switching sides thing again. But what do you think on that, Jamie?
I think initially Chloe would have like switched and done anything for Ved. I really think she got so caught up and was a little bit desperate for love at times. And then I think she would have found her feet a bit more, had a bit more self-compassion, self-worth, and realized, you know what, my true roots are with the Morats. I need to go back to them. And so I think she would have gone back there, and then Ved would have realized he loved her and he would have switched at that point.
It's nice. That, well done. Now we've got a question from Chloe Lenny. Good morning, Chloe. What's the real reason of you quitting the series? What do you think happened to Chloe? Did Ram really delete her? So we've dealt with you didn't really quit the series. You would have been always welcome back, Jamie. So we've dealt with that, Chloe. Sorry, I'm getting all confused with your name, Chloe, and the character, Chloe, and Jamie, and all this. So did Dan really delete her? I can tell you on that, Chloe, no. You know, because the door was and is always open for Chloe to return and watch this space. If just in the storylines, that all will be revealed in the books. That's, I think, all we can say on that. Jamie, I've got one from Vicky Lawson. Good morning, Vicky. Hi, Jamie. You and the actress who played Patsy always got stuck looking after the pets, Bob, Cloudy, Porky, and the chickens. Did you enjoy looking after them?
Yes, it was a lot of fun being able to interact with the animals when we were working. We'd often, like even when we weren't filming, we'd often go with the handlers and just enjoy hanging out with the animals.
Well, then, do you have any animals right now?
No, I don't have any at the moment.
And do the boys enjoy pets and dogs and cats?
They're quite unaware, so I don't know.
A lot of the listeners might be interested. Bob the dog and You had a lot of scenes with Bob the dog, and Bob retired and he came to live on my vineyard my best friend, you know, and the family's best friend. I mean, Bob was a very beautiful, lovely dog, Jamie. I mean, he was such a docile, he was terrific, touched. In fact, he was very popular with a lot of the tribal brothers and sisters, but yeah, he broke my heart, Bob. And that's, again, the love, you know, where, and he broke the family's heart. I mean, all the family of my kids and grandchildren. And so Bob was amazing, really. He was a good actor dog, a stunt dog. I mean, he could do the most amazing things. But he then became a dog and he did what he does for a living. He wasn't trying to be the fish climbing the trees. He was being a dog, and he got old. And I think he lived to be about 16 or 17. So he had a good life, Bob. And do you like animals, Jamie? You do a horse ride or?
No, I don't. Like, I don't mind animals, but I'm definitely not an animal lover the way Chloe was.
No, they can be a lot of work as well. So Zwenja Bethlehem. Good morning, Zwenja. You played one of the younger ones who had to trust the older teens to get it right. Imagine yourself in that situation. Do you think you would have trusted Amber, Celine, and Bray and the others? That's an interesting question. So, I mean, as a young one, I suppose, Jamie, that we look for our elders to show us the way. You trusted Amber, Celine, and Bray. I mean, obviously you had to say the lines the writers had written, but I mean, you know, like your children trust you to guide you, really, isn't it? That's really what it's all about. It's a big responsibility. I guess you trusted your mum and dad, or still trust your mum and dad.
Yeah, definitely. I would have trusted whoever, you know, trying to help you find a shelter and keep you fed. You just gravitate towards following and listening to them. Being that young, I definitely wasn't ready to just, I wouldn't have been ready to just go out on my own.
How do you think Chloe would have handled the current situation, Jamie, with COVID-19? And do you think she would have been resilient to survive with, I think she would have been probably.
I think she would have been resilient to survive. I think, though, a little bit, she wouldn't think things through properly and could still, you know, bend some of the rules to go and interact with animals, because sometimes she just got distracted like that.
Yeah. Are you a city person, Jamie, or a country person? Do you like the country or the city? Do you like the peace and solitude of the natural world, or the hub and bubble?
So, you know, being close enough to go and access all the city resources, but being on the outskirts so you have a semi-rural life and can enjoy that part of it.
Oh, that's nice. So I've got quite a long one here, Jamie, from Jeffrey Crowell. Good morning, Jeffrey. Some of your questions we've already addressed, but bear with me for a minute. This is an interesting element of Jeffrey's question. She seemed to like Pride before she met Ved, but Pride unfortunately turned her proposition down by calling her just a kid. Do you think a love relationship could have happened and worked out between Chloe and Pride if he reacted differently towards her? So do you think your character was just an infatuation with Pride, or do you think there was something in Pride that Chloe recognized?
I think Chloe was just infatuated because he was so much older and more experienced. I just think she was infatuated. I don't really think they had too much similar.
No. So I've got some others. I'm coming on to our YouTube questions now. Jamie, bear with me. From Glittery Cucumber. Good morning. That's a fascinating name. I love that name, actually. Glittery Cucumber. Isn't that amazing? That's a lovely name. This is going to be so interesting. I'm curious to hear her insights on autism, if she wants to get into it. Regarding the show, I wonder if her coming-of-age storyline with all the tribe members not acknowledging that she wasn't a kid anymore was true in real life also, or if she felt 100% included with the older cast mates. So, I mean, do you think you'd ever, I mean, you mentioned that you're a teacher's aide at the school, Jamie. Is that, that's the school where the boys go to? Is it the special needs school?
I worked in a, this was last year, I worked in a mainstream, a different.
Okay. I mean, do you think you'd ever like to get into teaching or autism as a career kind of path?
Yeah, it's definitely something I think of often. For me, it would be more around, you know, what's out there when it comes to helping parents or mothers or solo mothers of special needs children, like making sure they realise how important self-care is and, you know, what tools are accessible for them when you're having a new diagnosis for your child, like what support is there for the parent as well to help themselves through it. That is something that I am interested in and would look into. Also teaching, you know, as the boys get older, as my boys get older and the demands start to change, that is also something I have an interest in feeling.
That's great. And the coming of age storyline. I mean, if you don't mind, Clarice, you come, but I'm going to segue also and interweave your question with one from Petri Berries. Good morning, Petri. Jamie, Petri is saying, you were one of the youngest from the start and even more interesting to follow through the seasons. We met you as a little child with a teddy bear, and then all of the sudden, there you were in season 4, wondering if you're pregnant. We didn't just get to see a character evolve, but really see you or Chloe growing up too. That's interesting. How was that experience for you? So as an actress, that would have been quite interesting in those 3 or 4 years, Jamie, to see your character evolve. Did it ring true to you? I mean, as a young person, did you think this feels how life is?
I felt like it moved a bit quicker storyline-wise than it would have in my real life. I remember, you know, starting and you'd read the scripts and there were love stories for the older characters. And then, you know, as my character grew older, then the love story or the interest started happening. And that was really fascinating and an interesting and exciting storyline to do, because I'd always wanted to do that as one of the younger ones. I was like, I want my character to have a boyfriend. And so it was nice being able to get to that point on the show.
Oh, that's lovely. We got one from Lala Louie. Good morning, Lala. Oh, Chloe, she was my favorite, one of my favorites. I'm excited to hear this interview. I'm a busy mom now, so I've no idea what any of the actresses are doing. Thanks to everyone for taking time out for this. My question would be the ones I assume you'll all ask. What are you up to now? Talk about what happened with her leaving, if she was okay with it. What is her most cherished memory from the show? Now, we haven't addressed that. And any advice she has for people, her favorite quote. So do you have a favorite memory or anything particular that sticks out, Jamie?
I have like two memory, like, you know, if you had to really narrow it down, there are two that I would be my favorites. One of them is definitely like working on location with Bluebell. And I think it was around the time where Bluebell ran off and Chloe got lost and then Tyson found her. Working on location in that particular location with the elements and the animals and different cast members, I found that really exciting and I always cherish that part of the shoot. And then my other standout memory was working with Dan on the beach and there was a buggy and he drove up in it, and I just, another location shoot, I just found that really memorable and special as well.
Well, that's nice. And any advice for people? That's quite a wide thing, but any advice, Jamie, that you can give anybody? I mean, I suppose you were mentioning earlier about just accepting people for who they are, really. I mean, I'm not putting words in your mouth, but do you have any advice for anybody, Jamie, philosophically?
I think the biggest advice I would give to anyone, and advice that I now try to live by daily, is it's so important to be kind, kind to yourself, kind to others. And when you're out in society and you're out and about, you really never know what someone is dealing with, or when someone's presenting a particular way with certain behaviors, you don't know the backstory, you don't know what's going on, and it never hurts to just be kind about it. So that would be my advice.
That's so lovely. I my goodness, you sound like an old hippie like I that in the 60s, Jamie, where that was very relevant. It's quite interesting. I mean, each generation, you know, now we've had COVID and we've talked about it, that it's heartbreaking for those who are grieving, who have lost loved ones, and it's also devastating for those who are economically suffering, and many are losing jobs, and my heart goes out to all those people. But equally, it's a time for a reset, a time to pause, a time to reflect. And our Prime Minister, Jamie, said the same thing, to be kind. And what you're saying, I think, is, I mean, are you a religious person, Jamie? Are you religious? Are you spiritual?
I identify as being Christian.
Oh, lovely. And have you always felt, is it a born-again Christian? Have you found a faith?
My household was Christian, but it wasn't very dominant. We didn't go to church. It wasn't a big thing. But then when I had the third diagnosis for my youngest son, I just needed something bigger than myself to get through. And Christianity resonated with me in the way that it gave me an ability to hope and to believe in something bigger and to believe in miracles and just having that hope. And yeah, that's why I've decided to, you know, follow that line of religion, faith.
And that's given you some comfort, Jamie, no doubt, and some peace and contentment, because I know, having through our foundation, and let alone within my own family, and even speaking with Matt with his son, had to go through a year of counseling, and he was very brave to, in his podcast, to talk about that, and, you know, where he felt he was letting his son down, and the frustrations and the pain of love, you know, when you're, it's frightening. I mean, to have special needs children, find the dependent and worry and so, but you sound in a really good space, Jamie, and it's great. You sound very, very comfortable in your skin. And do you attribute that to your faith?
Attribute it to quite a few things. I definitely hit a rough patch four or five years ago, and I got help with counselling and, you know, seeing your doctor, and then just spending a lot of time really working on, like, these last few years, just working on those thoughts and turning to my faith, and just a combination of factors have allowed me and contributed to, and I'm grateful to be in a good place now. But that definitely hasn't always been the case, and it's been a long journey, but it's really nice to have made some progress and to be enjoying life, being grateful for life, and just changing your perspective so that you can just value things that are different, or things that you didn't expect, and just being able to value my children is something I'm very grateful I have now.
Yeah, that's terrific, and I think it's very very relevant. We often talk in the podcast, Jamie, that, you know, we get a lot of messages from people who are anxious or frightened or depressed or alone, and we always say the first thing is always talk, always reach out to somebody. And you, when you hit a bad patch in your life, you had, you know, the wisdom to talk about it and seek help and to do something about it. And, you know, it's I was speaking with Ryan the other day, and Tom Hearn, who played Ram, about poor Pia, the actor that sadly committed suicide. And suicide is such a terrible thing in our society. And I, Jamie, when I was 14, I mentioned, I think it was in Victoria's podcast, my best friend committed suicide. And it's something that was very hard for me as a 14-year-old, and to live with that, knowing that I didn't speak the night when he wanted to speak. And I had, of course, no idea that he was hurting so much. And And it's something that's still to this very day, it kind of bothers me. But, you know, that's, I think, the advice I think we both would share, Jamie, that no matter what the adversity, never give up hope. Always speak about it. Always reach out. You're never alone. And you're too precious. Every human being's life is so special and so precious. And love and, you know, is a four-letter word and the most beautiful thing out. You know, we're, and this is an old hippie speaking, where would the world be without love? We need to be gentle and kind and to love one another and to forgive and not to dwell and beat yourself up. And you've got to love yourself, Jamie. That's the first thing, I think, isn't it, important to accept yourself before you can give oxygen to somebody on an airplane. They say, give yourself oxygen first. And I think you've given yourself a lot of love, Jamie.
Okay. I think, yeah, for people out there who could be struggling, it is really hard to make those first steps to ask for help. But speaking from experience, it does get better. It's not always easy, but it can get better. And you, like, everyone is valued and everyone is important. So, yeah, just don't give up.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. And never to be frightened to, it's not a sign of weakness to say, look, I'm struggling and I need help. That's a sign of strength. And you know, if somebody falls, you'll be picked up. And that's what the world, all of us as a human species, we're extraordinarily resilient, aren't we, really, and innovative. And we can adapt and evolve and you know, but don't keep trying to climb the tree as the fish would. You know, Find the water where you can swim and that. So I've got one from, bear with me, from Meerkat Maryam. Good morning, Meerkat Maryam. That's from our Twitter. Hello, Jamie. If there was ever a tribe reunion, would you attend and why?
I would definitely attend because it would be a good experience and it was a very... It was a special time in my life, and in hindsight, I've learned so much from it. So, yeah, I'd definitely be part of that.
That's lovely. And Jamie, do you miss? I mean, you're a creative being, a very artistic soul. I think. Do you miss? Would you ever act again, or do you miss acting? Or
That I miss, especially in something so creative like The Tribe, where, you know, you had your costume designs and you had your makeup and it was all so different. To be part of something like that again ever would be a neat experience. As far as realistically getting back into the acting world, it's not really on my agenda because life as a mother is satisfying and demanding. But no, I do miss that part of it, just the script, seeing what's coming next, and the costume design. Oh, what is your character wearing next? And what are other characters wearing next? It was all so exciting.
And Jamie, did you do a blog once? Somebody mentioned that you I think, are a very talented writer. You write and express yourself very well.
I did a few entries, and then I just stopped. It is definitely something I would like to get into again.
No, that's lovely. That's nice too. I think you should do that, and it might. Maybe who knows? You know, we have some publishing company relationships, and certainly through our charity, that I think it might be quite interesting for you if we could get you to write even an article on what it's like to be a single mum, a solo mum with three special needs children, you know, and it's quite amazing because through our fandom, all of the fans, many of whom are becoming young parents, and they will relate to what life is like. And Jamie, there's many who are not parents, and there's nothing wrong with that. That's okay as well. You know, a lot of people, as you say, feel they're missing out. And I can imagine when the biological clock is ticking for some people, and think, oh, I'm not a mother yet, and or I'm not married yet, or I'm not in a relationship, Jamie, I've got one from Snook Anastasia. Good morning, Snook Anastasia, and this is from our Instagram account. Hi, Jamie. Bear with me. Where is it? Oh, yeah. Hiya, Ray and Jamie. My question is, did you get to keep any props or clothes from the show? Do you have any props or clothes that you've kept as a souvenir?
I don't have any currently. I remember being allowed to take home a pair of the boots that Chloe had worn, and I wore them out, and then obviously I grew and could no longer fit them. But yeah, a couple of Chloe's clothing items from series 3 is what I had for a little bit.
And Jamie, did you have a favourite costume at all? Did you have a favourite fashion statement? Do you when you think back?
My favourite. I quite liked when Chloe and Patsy dressed up. I think they were dressing up for Dell or something, and she had like almost like a flex corset, and I quite liked that outfit. It was fun to dress up as.
Well, that's great. And Jamie, do you have any hobbies? Do you cook? Do you like cooking, gardening, or music, or?
My current hobbies, I really like reading and, you know, quite a lot of self-help stuff, and I'm quite into learning more about self-compassion and mindfulness at this point in time. Other hobbies, I like reading crime thrillers, especially like Norwegian ones.
Wow, that's unusual. Why Norwegian ones?
Just the way they write it and the twists. I can never predict it all, and I really like when I get something wrong.
Isn't that interesting? No, that's fascinating. That I must check that out. And how did you discover Norwegian crime writers?
I was just at a secondhand bookshop, and it was like promoted as a popular book. Gave it a go and got hooked on with Joe Nesbo. So I started reading his stuff, and then just went from there.
Wow, that's fantastic. And Jamie, with your mindfulness, I mean, how do you define mindfulness?
For me, mindfulness, I would define it as being able to just be present, so and factual. So whatever you're doing, you're just factually labelling it, noticing it, enjoying it. Yeah, and then I also look to my children and how they're able to just be present when they're doing things. And so being present is what mindfulness is.
I think that's lovely, actually, because, I mean, your children are giving you a lot there, Jamie, aren't they? That they're very special and lovely human beings who are mirroring the love you as a mum have for them. They're giving you something back, and I think that's tremendous. And I admire that. As I say, I think my mother, Jamie, has special needs, and I didn't know it when she was alive. She was always very, I thought, quite eccentric, and loved the natural world and was very strong, very hard. But I would have been a handful as a kid. I really would have, you know, quite rebellious. And I never, you know, I used to hate school. And, you know, I was more interested in, you know, learning, doing my music. Okay, I won't bore you with all that stuff. But it's you know, when you look back. And, Jamie, I'm always fascinated with, you know, food is an interesting thing for me. And what is if you had to choose one of your mum's dishes, what would it be that you would think, oh, my mother, nobody makes this like my mother does? Is there a favourite dish that you love that your mum, when you're growing up, that your mum cooked?
I'm going to have to skip a generation. And, like, I love my nan's cooking, my grandma. Like, no offence to mum, but no, just no one makes fried bread like Nan does, or carrot cake with the cream cheese icing. Anything she cooks, really, it's so good.
Isn't that nice? And that's your Nan's.
That's my mum.
Wow. And is she still with us?
Yeah, she is. She's up further up north in Whangarei. I actually lived up there in one of her properties for a few years. I'd moved back to Auckland 2 years ago, but yeah, I lived up there in rural Northland for a little while, and so it was lovely to have those moments with her.
Isn't that lovely? And I mean, I love the culture of the Maori, the Pacific Island. I love that culture, Jamie, and because I'm very interested in Indigenous cultures, and there's a lot to that where, you know, they, I mean, children are brought up by, they say, a village, and it's, again, very tribal. But, I mean, I'm involved with our local marae on this. Yeah, very much so, Jamie. And, And in fact, my wife and I, I've been trying to learn to speak Maori, and I love the dance and the music and the fashion and the history and the spirituality, and I love it all. But I mean, the big thing is that you pay homage to your ancestors, to those who have come before, to the elders, and that's very nice. And very special. I'm very blessed to have a very close relationship with my grandchildren as well, and it's nice. But I mean, what's the story of the fried bread? Did your nana get it from her nana? Is it something that's handed down through the generations? And
I'm not sure how handed down. I know it's just like a typical Māori food that you make. I don't know I don't know who showed her, but the way she does it is, I've had a lot of different types of Māori bread from aunties and even shops and stuff, but hers is by far my favourite.
And what about yourself, Jamie? What do you think if I asked your sons in 20 years and said, what was your favourite mum's dish? What do they gravitate to? Is this something they always have to you to make something for them?
Well, Phoenix likes I make fried bread and he enjoys it. So quite nice.
So that's come down through the generations. And
I got her recipe for that one. It doesn't come out like hers does, but it's good enough.
And Jamie, some of the listeners might be intrigued. If you could explain how the Maori, cooking the food and the earth and that.
Hangi, that's one of I love a good hangi, and that's where you dig a hole in the ground and you put your meat and your veggies on like charcoal-y type bricks, and you dig it in the earth, and the men do that part, so I don't actually know how it all gets cooked, but it's delicious. It's got a nice smoky flavour to it.
Oh, I love it too. I mean, I'm very much involved. I love that in our local marae it's quite fun, and it's a very intimate thing, and food really, and our Mother Earth and the joy of the miracles of Mother Nature and all that entails, and that's lovely. And you know, Jamie, our hours whizz past so fast, it's frightening how time is funny. You can never, time just passes, doesn't it? Every minute, every second, and every day, really, and mindfulness to live in the moment and don't worry about the past or the future, really, just to enjoy every minute. It's very important. And Jamie, is there anything you'd like to say anything to any of the fans on our 20th anniversary, and also in the backdrop against this COVID-19? Any thoughts, anything on that?
Yeah, so my thoughts are, I just hope everyone, like themselves and their family, are staying as safe as you can. And it is a scary time for all of us, and just do your best to get through it. And then on a note, for being a fan of the tribe, thank you. Thank you for, the fans who reach out or who are interested or who have been impacted. It's so lovely to hear from people, and keep the dream alive.
That's lovely, Jamie. I think that's I echo that as well. And Jamie, on behalf of all our tribal brothers and sisters around the world and tribe world, I am sure I speak for all of them when I say it's lovely to, hear you in a good space in your life. And I think it will be really quite inspiring for you to have come through adversity, to have triumphed over that. And just by the way you're living your life is a great example, I think, and a testament to your great strength of character, if I may say. I had always recognized that in you as an individual. And I have to say, your mum and dad, tremendous human beings. I've always held you in very high regard. And I think that, it's like there's an old saying, where they say, come the day, come the man, where you will rise to meet challenges, and you've done that, and you've come through, you've had your struggles, but you're in a good direction, really, and they say it's not the storm you encounter, but how you set your sails, and I think you're setting your sails in a tremendous way, so well done on that. And I'd also like to say that, how much it means to me personally, but also the fans that we've had this time to have a chat. I think that's terrific.
And, lovely.
Yeah, no, and we'll do that again. And I'd like to catch up with the three boys at some point and see how Phoenix is doing. And you've as a young lass, you've known my family, and in fact, my goodness, you've seen my grandson when he was in nappies, probably. You know, it's a long time. Jamie, you take good care of yourself.
You too.
And you continue doing what you're doing, and lots of love to you and your family. And thank you very much for this morning having a chat. I've enjoyed it, and I look forward to the next time. And to all you in Tribe World, you take care of yourselves as well. And lots of love to you from Jamie and I. And as Jamie said, keep the dream alive, whatever the dream is. And to all of you, don't be fish trying to climb trees. You know, find your water and swim and soar and be happy and be kind. And all our lots of love to you all. All the very best. Thanks a lot, Jamie. We'll be in touch very soon.
Thank you.
Bye-bye now.
Bye.
Bye.